Choke Points, brought to you by Primary Residential Mortgage. Will light rail expansion projects across King County be delayed by this continuing concrete worker strike? It's now been nearly 2 months since any concrete was delivered. We know light rail needs a lot of concrete. So, Chris, what's the story?
Well, it's just imagine that you are building the world's, or the nation's largest expansion of light rail, and you can't get any concrete. That's what Sound Transit is in right now. More than 300 concrete workers continue to strike against six King County companies. The strike began the first week of December. So in the 7 weeks since it began, Sound Transit has missed out on more than 14,000 cubic yards of concrete.
Yikes.
Which the agency's John Gallagher puts into perspective.
One concrete truck holds about 10 cubic yards, so that means more than 1,400 missed deliveries. And if you lined all those trucks up, that would be a line of more than 9 miles long.
Yeah, it's hard to build guideways and parking garages without 1,400 concrete.
What are they going to do?
Build out steel? Well, no. Right now, they're just waiting. They're just waiting to get that. And in fact, Gallagher visited the Shoreline South Station last week and found a lot of forms, but nothing filling
them.
There
are a number of forms that are there that are waiting for concrete to be poured, and those are obviously on hold. So there's just a lot of work that's just on pause at the moment.
Of all the light rail projects right now, the biggest impact is being felt on the Linwood extension. I mean, there's a lot being done right there. And Gallagher says that not only is this impacting the projects, but it's also impacting jobs.
They've had to lay workers off. So far, the contractors have had to lay off about 164 workers. And there are more than another 120 workers who are likely to be laid off in the coming weeks.
The big question now is, will this have a long-term effect on the scheduling if this thing goes on?
It hasn't affected any projected opening dates yet, but obviously it is causing delays on these the construction projects.
And what's frustrating for Sound Transit, obviously, is all it can do is sit on the sidelines because it's not a party to these negotiations. All they can do is talk to either side and just say, hey, can you guys sit down and get this thing resolved?
We just would like to get back to work. That's why we're really just calling on both sides to get back to the negotiating table with an unbiased mediator, resume negotiations so that the work can get back underway.
A mediator was called in last week to help settle the dispute, but the talks didn't go anywhere. They really didn't even get going. It was the first meeting between the two sides in months, almost 6 months. So there doesn't seem like they're getting anywhere at the table. Now, the strike isn't just impacting Sound Transit. Anybody who needs concrete in King County is struggling. Public, private projects. The city of Seattle told me it's delayed several projects that were set to start this year, and it has impacted the construction of the bus rapid transit corridor on Madison Avenue. The Washington Department of Transportation says the strike has led to contractor layoffs and delays across all of its projects in King County, including the 520 Bridge project and the expansion of 405 between Renton and Bellevue.
And I hear the convention center is also being delayed. So what, I mean, and this is not a strike in sympathy with some strike someplace else. This is a local strike, right?
No, this is between the companies and these 330 Teamsters or so, the usual suspect line items, better pay, better benefits, being treated better by those companies. And it seems to be pretty protracted. From what I heard out of the negotiations last week, they didn't even take off. I mean, they got in there and then they were like, no, this isn't anything. And they just walked out. So it sounds like they're struggling to find any common ground.
At what point do you just cave because the costs of, I mean, for a project like Sound Transit, already over budget, how do you save any money by not giving the workers what they want at this point?
Well, again, it's not a strike against Sound Transit.
I know,
it's
but that's against, what I mean. That's the whole point here. Sound Transit, at some point, being the big dog here, needs to say to the construction company, okay, give them the raise because that'll cost us a lot less than continuing to delay this project.
Again, same with 520 and the WashDOT. You're thinking, I mean, these are big, big companies, public, private companies, that have the ability to turn the screws when they need to. Right now, they're kind of sitting on the sidelines. But yeah, at some point, someone's going to go, listen, we're tired of this, and try to force the issue somehow from the outside looking in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have our apparently our first 5G flight cancellations, Chris.
Yeah, we do. It happened yesterday and at Payne Field up here because of the very, very, very foggy conditions. All of the Alaska Airlines flights out of Payne were canceled yesterday. And if today's kind of just as soupy, we could run into other issues. As you know, fog socked in the airport all day, which meant low visibility landings, which meant those radio altimeters were in play. And we've talked about this. This is an issue when basically you're using autopilot to get in as far as you can to the ground because of the low visibility, bad weather, things like that. And so far, the FAA hasn't cleared the Embraer 175 that Alaska flies into and out of Payne Field for these landings. So that those are the smaller planes that look like little mini 737s with the winglets and whatnot, 76-seaters. The Seattle Times reports that the radio altimeter on this particular plane could experience greater interference. Alaska flies about 130 of these planes under Horizon and whatnot on regional routes. So this could be an issue. On some of these, again, this is a plane that has not been cleared by the FAA, also running into problems at Portland as well for this airplane. So
just this model?
Just this model, exactly. I mean, 76% of the commercial fleet in the U.S. has been cleared for low visibility landings around 5G. This is one of the planes that has not. And again, as a regional carrier with a lot of destinations into bad weather places, I mean, from, granted, it flies to mainly sunny places here out of Payne, but getting out is one issue when it's super foggy.
Couldn't you give the tower a little switch, you know? So Embraer incoming, you flip off the 5G, it lands safely, you flip the 5G back on.
Payne isn't one of the places, as far as I know, that has gotten the 5G dampener like they have at SeaTac. So maybe, you know, as this rolls out and we see where are more of the bad weather places or the foggy places, you might be able to see some more of those being installed. But yeah, it was kind of a shock. 24 flights yesterday out of Payne, all of them, all the passenger planes anyway. The 757s from FedEx are still taking off, believe me, from Payne. I'm hearing those overhead. So it's just passenger service.
Seattle's Morning News on Cairo News Radio. Some state lawmakers want to make it illegal to use a fake COVID vaccination card, and the latest tax relief proposals in the legislature. They're actually talking about cutting taxes. Let's go to Cairo News Radio's Hannah Scott. Good morning, Hannah.
Good morning, Dave. Yes, there's a couple of different bills out there floating around labeled as bipartisan that have to do with sales tax relief. The most interesting is the one that is from Democratic Senator Mona Doss, and this would be a sales tax reduction of 1% across-the-board sales tax reduction that is, I believe, expected to provide about $2 billion in tax relief a year should it get done. Now, she just dropped this, and, you know, she's a fairly high up there senator, and it's got some Republican sponsors, and she is hopeful to get this done. I did get a chance to talk yesterday to some of the leadership and the budget writers about the chances of this actually passing. This is Pat Sullivan. He is a representative who is the lead budget writer in the House. Here's what he had to say about it.
You know, there have been a lot of tax relief bills that have been submitted both by Democrats and by Republicans, and we'll sort through all of those. You know, a lot of what you're seeing in available funds for the budget are one time. A majority of them are one time. So we've got to be really cautious about, you know, what are the impacts both for the one time bills that just affect one time relief versus those that are ongoing. So we'll sort through those bills as we move forward.
Basically, kind of early to say whether it's going to end up being something that gets done. So far, it doesn't have a hearing. Senator Dingra, Monica Dingra, she also wanted to weigh in on this yesterday during the Democrats' media availability to point out that while this is about investing, the sales tax cut would be about investing in Washingtonians. She echoed that there's a few different proposals for that, but also really wanted to point out what they've already done.
I would like for us to take a broader view of that philosophy and take a look at the investments we have made as a state in people for the last 4 years, really making sure that we're investing in early learning, making sure we're investing in behavioral health, making sure we're investing in the working families tax credit. A lot of these programs where we're helping people actually in the long run end up putting more money into their pockets. The work we've done with the Poverty Reduction Task Force, really making sure we have a plan towards self-sufficiency and wealth generation. A lot of these policies, a lot of these bills are about making sure that we are making Washingtonians more economically independent.
So she wanted to point that out. I will say the House Speaker, Lori Jenkins, also weighed in on this. By the way, this would be the first time, should this go through, first time there's been a sales tax cut in the state since like 1982.
Yeah, so, I couldn't remember last time that happened. And this would be a cut of 1% from 6.5 to 5.5 for this.
Correct.
This is just for the state sales tax. Mm-hmm. In King County, we're at 10% now,
yeah,
right? So
yeah,
we'd get from 10% to 9%. But that does put money back in people's pockets. And also, it would be a shock if to see Democrats actually pass it. So here's my question. Is this serious, or are they going to pass it sort of to, you know, polish up their own legislative records, knowing full well that the governor would veto it?
My feeling is no, and I'll tell you why. You heard what the budget writer in the House said, Pat Sullivan. Listen to what House Speaker Lori Jenkins had to say.
But I would just say there's a whole bunch of proposals out there, and we're going to look at all of the proposals. I think one of the big distinctions between the proposals is we have a lot more one-time money that we can invest in Washingtonians than we do ongoing dollars. So an ongoing year-over-year bill like that, which Senator Doss has proposed, is probably more challenging than something like the bill that Reps Paul and Rule proposed, which was is a sales tax holiday, one-time, limited period of time, but still giving Washingtonians the opportunity to get a sales tax break for, you know, they buy that are less than $1,000. The fact of the matter is we're going to look at all of these and see what works best in the budget situation that we're in.
So that sounds like a no for a permanent.
It sounds like
debt.
A no. Yeah. And she's not wrong, right? This isn't.
Yeah.
It's
well,
how much
is the surplus now? Because that's the big. That's
it's
the
like
big deal.
$4 billion.
$4 billion.
Yeah. It's an enormous amount of money, but some of. Yeah. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
But there's a lot. You know, the governor has some big wish list items. There's a lot going on with climate change that he wants to invest that in. He's got some really record investments that he's proposing in his budget for homelessness and housing and various other things. So there's a lot to spend it on, but you know, there's a belief that there should be some room for some tax relief. This Senator Doss bill, and by the way, that other one that the Speaker Jenkins just referenced, the tax holiday, neither of those have a hearing scheduled yet. But I will say, Linda Wilson on the Republican side, she has a very interesting bill that provides tax property tax relief, as a couple of other tax reliefs, and it does away with the capital gains income tax. For like long term, it's very wide ranging bill that does have a hearing this morning. So I'll be taking a look at that and seeing what's going on there. But keep your posted.
Does away with the capital gains tax? No, I didn't. I thought they didn't pass that.
No, they absolutely passed the capital gains tax
It's been enforced.
It is. I don't know that it's. I believe, yes, it took effect in July. It is currently in court, though, in a legal challenge, actually next week.
Okay,
about a week and a half, we'll have oral arguments in that, and I'll be covering that.
Because, we all should have seen some kind of tax form for that if it was being enforced.
It might be on pause for the legal battle. I'm not 100%. I don't remember
the
dates.
Well, let me know before April 15th.
I will. I'll look. I'll message you after the show.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about this law concerning proof of vaccination.
Right. And this has to do with, you know, the proof that you have to show if you're going to go to a concert or anything like that. It basically creates a misdemeanor if you use these, and it's a felony if you provide one to someone. It's from Senator Jesse Solomon.
This is really about truth in advertising. I think people who are medically vulnerable, who want to go to a place that has vaccine requirements, should be able to go there without wondering or experiencing somebody using false vaccines and possibly infecting them. It's a matter of fairness.
And he says he really thinks that this is about being, it's not necessarily that he wants people to get locked up, is the point he's trying to make.
And we know that U.S. Customs and Border Patrol officers have seized thousands of fraudulent vaccine cards at international mail facilities already. So that's scary. And, you know, like I said, a quick Google search, you'll see all kinds of cases like this. So I think we need to tighten it up. I do see it as a deterrent more than something that's going to create a lot of cases. I would hope that, you know, at most only a few cases are filed, the word gets out and people think twice about it. That's really the goal here.
So this had a hearing yesterday morning, and pretty much universal opposition from those who testified at this hearing. Here's a little bit of a sample of what they said.
Folks don't want to be lab rats.
The temporary emergency initiated by Governor Inslee 2 years ago
will fundamentally change our society unless we ensure that all mandates related to COVID remain temporary and are not codified or normalized by becoming state law.
This bill would create an environment where a five-year-old could be charged with a misdemeanor and their parent or guardian may be guilty of a felony.
Omicron has proven to be as arbitrary and capricious in who it infects as policymakers who continue to pursue historically unprecedented limits on the basic rights and freedoms of the public.
Pretty much all went like that. And I asked Monica Dhingra, who was the chair of that committee, about what she thought. And she definitely thought there was some interesting pushback raised there. So not sure what the future of that bill might be.
Yeah. Well, those cards are really easy to counterfeit. And I can't imagine the ushers of the rep challenging somebody who, you know. Yeah, I mean, if you really wanted to be serious about it, you'd attach it to the driver's license or something and have a scan.
Right. Yeah. But, and I mean, anything that's going to create another crime, and it is worded in a way where you really could charge like a five-year-old with a misdemeanor. And a lot of the concern was about the fact that parents, because they would be the one providing to their child this fake vaccine card to get into a concert or whatever, they could face a felony. And that was a big concern. So, and nobody really wants to lock anybody else up more up, I think, in this state. So,
yep. Cairo News Radio's Hannah Scott. Thank you, Hannah.
You bet.
Your daily dose of kindness brought to you by Heritage Homecraft. So yesterday's daily dose of kindness, it missed the mark for some. I got messages on Twitter from a couple listeners who felt it was not what they usually wait for and listen for. The story, it was from beloved CBS reporter Steve Hartman, who's always a slam dunk. It was about high school students in rural America who stepped up to the task of becoming their town's volunteer EMT unit because, just like the rest of the nation, there was a staffing shortage here. But Mike Shaw wrote me on Twitter. He said, "Hey, Cairo Radio, Colleen, this is not a daily dose of kindness. It's a tragedy." I pushed back a little, quoting the late, great Fred Rogers, saying when things get scary on the news to look for the helpers. And then he pushed back, too, writing, "I think this piece wasn't a good one to put on. It whitewashes things. The story is that systemic flaws in our health system force kids into unpaid labor. They're more heroic victims than heroes." Point taken. Who am I to tell him how to receive the daily dose of kindness? I've been doing this for, I think, nearly 6 years now, and you've all come to expect a certain standard of kindness. It's appointment radio for many of you, and I let some of you down. I'm sorry. The goal for the daily dose of kindness has always been to leave you feeling hopeful. So Mike and anyone else who felt the same, today's story is dedicated to you. Thank you for telling me what you need. It takes place in Rome, New York, at a rehabilitation and nursing home. John Burley became a patient there right before Thanksgiving. He had to give up his dog, Boomer, to the Humane Society. John's nurse is Jennifer Smith.
I came in on a Monday morning to work. First thing in the morning, the phone was ringing. It was John calling from his hospital bed, saying, "Boomer's in the pound, Boomer's in the pound." And he was saying it so many times, and I could tell in his voice that he was scared, that he was sad.
As is the creed for so many nurses, you don't just take care of the patient, you take care of the person. So Jennifer got to work.
I went home with a heavy heart that night. You know, I was sad. I have a 13-year-old dog at home. I have had him since he was 9 months old. I couldn't imagine my dog being taken away.
And she found Boomer at the Rome Humane Society, and she reached out her hand, and he licked her. She adopted him on the spot, of course, and reunited Boomer with...
He's my buddy.
Jennifer will care for the dog full-time and bring John's best friend to him whenever she works, so he doesn't have to be without Boomer.
It's a good lady, because she watches out for me.
So I hope I did better today.
Yes. And now it's 7:48, direct from the G and Ursula Show, which starts at 9 o'clock here on Cairo Radio. Here is G. Scott. You saw the state attorney general is going after Google for tracking us all, allegedly without our knowledge. Do you believe that when you turn off tracking, that the tracking is actually turned off?
Absolutely not. So let me get this straight, Dave and Colleen. Some folks believe that changing their account or their device settings on their phone would allow them to protect their privacy and control their personal data that Google could access. So you looked at your phone and you said, phone, do you want your data shared? No, I don't want it shared. So you mean to tell me that Google doesn't have the best interests at heart? Okay, let's stop for a second. What's Google here for? What is Google here for?
To provide us answers to our queries.
And for, wait a minute. For free.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know this. No problem, G. You love to read up on stuff at the end of your show. You love to look up things. And you press Google. Google this. Google that. So much so that they have a name for it. You just Google it. Like, their company is so good that you just Google it. That's the name of the company. Wait till they find out about what Facebook is doing, but that's another story. So here's my question. Can we provide one of these big companies out here? Is there a company out here that gives us free service by not taking our information in return? What company's out there?
DuckDuckGo.
So I people got mad at me yesterday when I discussed this on a show. Like, come on, everyone.
Why'd they get mad at you?
Sometimes the truth hurts. Kind of like when I get on the scale on a Monday after the weekend, I get mad at the scale. The scale looking at me like, bruh, this ain't on me. You had fried foods all weekend. You mad at me because I'm 10 pounds heavier.
When I weigh myself, it gives me my weight in loaves of sourdough now. It just says, well, you ate 4 loaves of sourdough, so that's about how much you weigh, my friend. But I get it. But as long as, have you guys watched Westworld? I know, Dave, you watched like the first season, but it was too violent. I feel like you should skip to season 3 because it's all about this, like, data collection and this fantasy of what can be done with it. And in season 3, I'm not giving away anything for this, but it has to do with so much data has been collected over the years, and this is in the future, that they can actually predict the outcome of your life, like your fate. Your fate is pre-chosen for you based on the information they've collected. Like, they can make a profile and predict accurately what's going to happen to you.
There are some religions that do that already, Colleen.
Oh. Tell me about it. So that gave me like the heebie-jeebies about it. But what can you do? We all need our phones. We all need Google, I think. Like,
when I was discussing this yesterday, I was actually thinking about Dave Ross.
Uh-huh.
And let me tell you why. Because I know myself and Colleen, it's us two that have been putting pressure on Dave for years. Dave, you got to get this. Dave, you got to do FaceTime. Dave, you got to get the smartphone.
Tiger King.
You got to do all these things. Right. Dave Ross was perfectly fine with the landline. He was perfectly fine with the old school phone. He didn't need a cell phone. He didn't need
teletypes. I was fine with teletypes.
I even put his face all over Twitter when he was growing his beard.
Dave Ross still uses whiteout, fam.
Yep.
He doesn't.
True.
So all of these things, and we pressured him. We pressured our moms. We pressured our dads, and we told them they needed to get this. So now that they're on here, now it's us that are complaining, oh my goodness, how dare Google take our data?
Hey, here's something else. I still listen to radio on a radio.
Whoa,
And you know, the radio doesn't collect any data about you. It just throws information at you 24/7 without stopping.
Hey, how about the 10-year challenge? Have you done a 10-year challenge recently, Dave?
What now? What's
On social media, on Facebook. Everybody's doing
like
a 10-year
challenge.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And how about the first day of school? Everybody doing the first day of school?
I did that
loved
with the
ones?
Kids.
Every year. Here's the first day, here's the second day, here's all these days, and this is how they look. This is where they're going to eat. This is where we're going on vacation. Oh, let's talk about the grocery stores. Oh, do you have your Safeway card? Because you get a discount by getting a Safeway card. Okay, bing, ding, ding. Every time I come into this store, I get a six-pack every single day, and you know exactly what I'm getting.
She's making me cry, Dave.
Hey, we took first day of school pictures, but we just had the snapshots printed. We didn't post it for anybody else. Who else would care about what our kids looked like on the first day of school?
Friends and family who think our daughters are cute and awesome. Beg you to send me a picture of your grandchildren, for Pete's sake.
Well, why do you care what my grandchildren look like?
Because I care about you and your life, and I would like to be a part of it by seeing pictures of it.
Well, I'll describe them for you. They're female and very cute.
Hey, Dave, yes? back in the day, did you used to have a beeper?
Oh, yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
Did your wife or anybody have different codes that if they, like, if this
no,
is
no,
me?
No. The beeper was strictly for work. My wife never beeped me.
She, what?
She connects through telepathy.
Wait, Dave. Wait. Your wife never beeped you, fam?
No.
What if she needed you?
She's
needed
a fully
me?
Capable person.
Yeah. She'd write a note and post it on the refrigerator.
She knows what's up.
Are you going to do your show at 9 today?
I think so, man.
Okay, so listen to G and Ursula at 9 on Cairo Radio. On Tuesday mornings, we go live to the nation's capital, and Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter David Farenthold, who used to be with the Washington Post, but as of today is with the Washington, D.C. Bureau of the New York Times. I assume that means that you had to get a haircut and buy a suit, right?
Well, in the age of the pandemic, all it's really meant so far is that I've been on Zooming with different sets of people. So far, I'm still cutting my own hair as I have been during the pandemic, so nothing really changed.
Seriously?
I got some clippers, put it on like a 5, and just shaved the whole head that way.
Okay, well, that sounds
it's a good thing
stylish.
We're on the radio, Dave. That's what I'm
very
saying.
Very stylish. Yeah. All right, so tell me about this story concerning the alleged draft executive order written by somebody, never imposed, but which apparently called upon the military to seize voting machines. What do we know about that?
Well, we're still learning so much more about what happened in the time between the 2020 election and Biden's inauguration. Obviously, there was a lot of things that happened in public, like the January 6th attack. But we're learning more about the efforts to undermine the election. And there were a number of folks who were in Trump's orbit who were proposing these sorts of things. One idea was to make Sidney Powell, that lawyer who was airing all the completely false theories, to make her a sort of a special counsel like Robert Mueller had been to investigate fraud. Yes, and one of the other proposals was to use the military to seize ballots. And this was such a feature of the Trump era that I think only got worse in the last couple of months of the Trump administration because he had so few decent advisors. He had so many more crazies around him. But there were so many things that were proposed, written down, thought about that never happened. And it's so hard to judge in hindsight how close they came to happening. But that's a scary proposal because that was a time when Trump was saying yes to a lot of completely false and insane things.
Right. But I'm trying to figure out whether there could be an innocent explanation for this, because sometimes in certain cases, a judge will say, preserve the evidence, don't erase anything.
No, I mean, I don't think that this was written with any sort of innocent purpose in mind. This was written, this was part of the whole stream of thought that was trying to push Mike Pence to say, I can't certify this election because of these, what we know now, were completely false allegations of fraud. There were all these efforts to co-opt the military or the Justice Department or the Supreme Court, somebody outside of the White House to go along with this. And thankfully, nobody did.
Okay. How important is it that we also learn that the former Attorney General Bill Barr has been talking with the investigators?
It is really interesting. Barr, you remember, after the election came out and said that there was no truth. There were no allegations of voter fraud on the scale necessary to swing the election. He threw cold water on Trump's claims, and then unfortunately resigned, leaving a bunch of interim folks in there to take the brunt of Trump's fury for the last few weeks. So I guess I'm not surprised that Barr is talking to them. And Barr was somebody who always was described as like, he really wants the presidency to have more power, and Trump was the president, so he served Trump. But he's not one of these folks that was a Trump loyalist all along. And, Barr's got to make a life in Washington now that Trump is gone.
Yeah. Okay, now the case where there is some pretty strong evidence, and that being the recorded phone call to the Secretary of State of Georgia, is this investigation being launched by a Georgia grand jury, and they apparently are going to have quite a bit of power to compel testimony. So remind us about this call and what made it potentially a criminal act.
This is a call first reported by my former colleagues at the Washington Post between Trump and the Secretary of State of Georgia, who is the person who oversees elections there, in which Trump made all these wild allegations of fraud that were totally false and eventually told the Secretary of State, I need you to find 11,788 votes, whatever the number of votes that he had lost Georgia by. I need you to find that many votes. So basically taking off the mask and saying, this is not about voter fraud allegations. I want you to cheat so I can win. And so what the district attorney in Atlanta is investigating is whether that broke Georgia law by trying to undermine Georgia in elections. Obviously, if anybody other than the president had done that, if you imagine like a mafia don or a gang leader or a party leader, anybody else who wasn't the president had called the Secretary of State and said, find 12,000 votes so my guy could win, that would seem like a crime. We'll see now if people think it's so when the president does it. The Fulton County, in, which is where Atlanta is, the judges have just given permission for the DA to impanel a special grand jury to work on this case alone, only this case, for the next 12 months if they need it.
Okay, but there was no or else in that call, right?
There was no or else, meaning, you know, I guess you're saying like he wasn't saying find these votes or I'll sell Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, if it was a mafia guy, he would say either do this or, you know, we're going to break your knees. Trump didn't say that.
And I think that's right. You know, I think the allegation that you might make is that, you don't need that. That if you're telling somebody to cheat, if you're telling somebody to, you know, who has the power to corrupt the election, you don't need an or else. And also there may be the idea that if it's the president of the United States telling you that, that there's some sort of implied power or consequences that comes along with potentially disagreeing. And there has been for Raffensperger, the guy, Secretary of State, who said no to Trump. Trump has been vigorously campaigning for a Republican who wants to unseat him in Georgia.
Well, clearly political consequences, but that's my other question. So, I mean, politicians are punishing each other all the time. So if the only Trump has no formal power over the Secretary of State of Georgia. I mean, that's the whole principle of states' rights, isn't it? He can't tell the Secretary of State of Georgia or the Governor of Georgia what to do. He can give him a nasty phone call and threaten to tank his political career. But would there be anything strictly illegal about that?
I don't know Georgia law well enough to tell you for certain, but I think the DA's argument is going to be that he doesn't have to have formal power. He doesn't have to be able to threaten this, you know, Secretary of State with consequences. That if this is a conspiracy, that if you're trying to get somebody else to break the law, it would have been illegal for the Secretary of State to do what Trump was telling him to do. That if you're conspiring to undermine elections in the state of Georgia or to get somebody else to undermine the elections or invalidate them, that will be enough.
Yeah. By the way, what do you think about the president calling up Peter Ducey on Fox to apologize for calling him an SOB on the hot mic?
I mean, I don't know what it means for Biden, but that is the role that Peter Ducey has, I think, delighted in playing at the White House, of sort of needling Biden. The same way they were people who delighted in sort of like pushing Trump's buttons, and it was a win when Trump got mad at them. You know, I think it was wrong for Biden to say that, and I'm glad he apologized. But for Peter Ducey, this is the best thing that's ever happened to him.
Yeah. I'm glad that Fox has this new attitude that a president should never be insulting of journalists.
Right. You know, better late than never. You can ring my
bell. Ring the bell. This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien and Chris Sullivan. And here's Rachel Bell.
4.5 million Americans quit their jobs in November.
I started to feel after a while like I wasn't paid enough for the misery that I was feeling.
I felt enormously stressed and burned out and stuck.
The job I had was extremely demanding, 60 hours a week, and it was exhausting.
It's the Great Resignation. And many Americans are leaving their jobs without another one lined up.
I did feel confident that it was going to work out.
48-year-old Wes Plate left his job in tech last spring after feeling physically and mentally depleted.
On the team I worked on at my last job, out of 8 of us, I think 4 quit.
Research shows that mid-career workers over the age of 35 are now uncharacteristically jumping ship.
I was a little bit inspired by young people who don't seem to have any loyalty to their employers. And it's like, oh, okay, well, if they can move around between jobs, why can't I? It's exciting to think that we have that much control over our destiny if we just make that decision.
Wes didn't want to find a new job right away. He used retirement savings to take 6 months off to run ultra marathons and spend time with his teenage daughter. And he just signed on with an Australian company that approached him to work remotely.
We're really focusing on making sure that we are creating a culture of kindness where we all work hard, but we also treat each other with respect. We're trying, I think, to go a little bit differently from the way that we were treated in our past job.
I interviewed 5 local people who quit their jobs over the last year, and
it's not just about the money.
That's Ian Cook, Vice President of People Analytics at Visier, a company that has collected data from 9 million employees over the past 5 years. He says people are prioritizing work-life balance and respect. And it's not just high-income tech workers who are quitting.
The retail space and the healthcare space saw very extreme rates of resignation turnover. The retail saw highest proportion of resignations.
And they're moving on to entrepreneurship or completely different fields.
So I worked at a restaurant in Seattle, and it was a very busy place.
Laurel Whitley said she loved her job until the pandemic hit.
I'm trying to think of how to say this in a nice way.
Customers were impatient, rude, and didn't want to comply with the mask mandate. And when new management came in,
I was treated as less than in front of customers. It made me feel terrible. And so I asked to have a sit-down meeting. And I was told that I should just expect that that's how I would be treated. And so I put in my 2 weeks' notice. At that very moment, I deserve to be treated better.
About 2 months later, Laurel got a job at King County Metro, making about a third of what she brought in at the restaurant with tips.
It was the best thing I ever did. I was so scared, and I haven't looked back.
A few weeks ago, Laurel got COVID.
And I'm panicking because all I can think of is my boss is going to yell at me because I'm putting them in a bind, because that's what it would be like in my old job. So I called. And he was so nice. He was like a grandpa. It was so sweet. He was like, don't worry about coming in. Kept saying, I'm so sorry. Please don't be mad at me. I don't want to lose my job. And he was like, no. You're not going to lose your job.
For Janine Worthington, her high profile marketing job at a big tech company had lost its appeal.
I mean, I was reporting directly to an amazing CEO. I was collaborating with teams in four time zones. But the intensity of COVID, the intensity of the role, and the intensity of two major family health crises landed me in just a pure state of overwhelm. And that was the impetus for, okay, there's got to be something else out there.
Her new employee used data to determine what is important to its workers. So they only work 9 to 5.
I mean, I was not doing 9 to 5 work hours. I was probably doing 24-hour days.
They opened several small offices around the region to decrease commute times, and internal meetings are limited to 25 or 45 minutes.
We all are very respectful of each other's time.
After 23 years in the industry, Seattle's Corby Sears quit his job in the game industry and is taking time off to figure out what's next.
This is why I am a big proponent of universal basic income. The big fear that they'll just sit around and get high and eat Cheetos. I think the opposite. The times that I have come up with the most interesting things were the times where I had time on my hands. And if you look at the people that we rever, Bill Gates' dad had money. Then Bill Gates refused to go to college. I think he went to one semester and then just hung out for 3 years and tinkered with the personal computer. Elon Musk, he came up with money. He had all the time in the world to think about things. When we talk about universal basic income, the Native American single mom with three kids, if she had time to think about things, what would she come up with? Like, why are we assuming this all is just like the rich white guys that are brilliant when really what they have was time?
Ian Cook says the 20s are being called the decade of the employee. For once, we have the upper hand.
I feel hugely empowered in a way that I've never felt before.
It's been a very interesting 24 hours. I made the right decision.
That's a great feature Rachel did. And so they're all talking about the power of having the time to make the right decision and figure out what you want to do. So good for them. And I'm also happy to hear that that Metro is a sympathetic employer, because I like to know my tax money is going to pay people who treat their employees kindly.
Yeah, I mean, I think so many now are just noticing the flexibility and the space, and, you know, workaholism is a real thing. And companies need to understand that if they want to keep talented, loyal employees, they have to start the give and take on their end as well.
Yeah. So much to tell it to the companies that employ the concrete workers. Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News, the podcast. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. You can find our podcast weekday mornings right at 9:30.
And if you subscribe, you will never miss the Daily Dose of Kindness.